Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. But today, actually, I'm broadcasting by Skype, live from a small village in Bavaria in southern Germany in the Alps. It's a beautiful, cold night outside, and it's past 11 o'clock, and the moon is full, but it's having a wonderful time here. I'm here in Germany visiting relatives that my family has not seen since World War II, and I'm so happy to see them. On the drive here tonight, I saw a UFO in the sky, and I was so happy to see my benevolent extraterrestrial friends. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today and for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the Seattle area. And we now have over 250,000 listeners in over 90 countries. And I just want to thank everyone so much for their wonderful support. I know that if we all work together, we can and will make this planet a much better and happier place. There's a listener survey going on right now at KKNW. And if you'd like to participate, please go to the KKNW website at www.1150kknw.com. I really enjoy hearing from all of you and how I can make the show even better. During the first hour from 2 to 3 p.m. Seattle time today, I'll be interviewing my good friend Wolf Storr, who's one of the world's most famous ethnobotanists, live from his house here in Bavaria in southern Germany. Wolf's with me here in his kitchen with his cat and dog, and we're all having a wonderful time today. They're very friendly. Then from 3 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. today, I'll discuss how water is life and why good clean water is so important for humanity. Guests on the program will include Michiko Hayashi, the Modal Peace Project, as well as Professor Giuseppe Vitellio of the Physics Department of the University of Salerno in Italy. I wanted to tell everyone from the recent water conference I attended in Bulgaria, I've formed a study group with some of the world's most famous water scientists to create a new water-based quantum computer. The computer will be organic and able to process and store information far faster and at a greater scale than any of the machine-based computers today. Water-based organic computers were used in the Atlantean civilization until they destroyed themselves 12,500 years ago. And organic computers, I'm told, are based upon amino acids are currently used in the Lemurian civilization beneath Mount Shasta. The public is welcome to join in this effort. And if you're interested in joining this, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I have talked to Professor Albert Einstein about this new project, and he's quite excited. So he's been giving me information on where to look and how to formulate this new computer. Then during the second half of the second hour from 3:30 to 4 p.m., I'll be again bringing on Michiko Hayashi, who will be discussing the new auto-vibrational machines, which can help with almost any physical or spiritual problem. She'll be at the Galactic Wisdom Fair at 9101 Stillicum Road in Olympia, Washington on November 10th, 2018. Dr. Masaru Emoto discovered that everything is hado or vibration. He used special hado machines to successfully treat 10,000 people before he passed away in 2014. Michiko will be giving these special hado treatments at the coming fair. And along with her, there will be other vendors in giving readings as well as myself. And I hope you can come to this wonderful free Out of This World healing event. Before we start, I'd also like to thank everyone for their support for this radio program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate your help and support, because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. I'd also like to thank Corey and Saul and Kirkland for their generous support, as well as my friends Marion Elias in Costa Rica and Bradley and Jim in London and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness and make this world a better place. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of the show, and we're also looking for additional sponsors and advertisers. Any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services in over 90 countries. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website, providing wonderful support. My friends in the Galactic Alliance, who I know have been supporting my show and my angelic and earthly family. And, of course, Eric at KKNW, without whose help and support, this program would not be possible. I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. And if you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who have passed on or contact your guides and get some good spiritual advice, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. My next Galactic Wisdom Conference, the fifth annual conference, will be held at the same location, Olympia, Washington, in the United States, from April 12th to the 16th. We'll have some amazing people there, including Erin Elizabeth of Health Nut News, as well as Simon Parks, who will be giving presentations. If you register before the end of the year, the cost for the three-day conference is only $55. And if you'd like to register, please send me an email to, pardon me, outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I have some wonderful, also, fairs I'd like to tell you about. On November 2nd and 3rd, on November 3rd and 4th, at the Crystal Spirit Spiritual Center in Tacoma off of 38, next to the Tacoma Mall. I'll be giving readings then. And I hope you can come by and at least say hi. In addition, in June 2019, I'll be giving presentations at Watkins Books in London, England, as well as at Banyan Books in beautiful Vancouver, Canada. I'll let you know the exact dates when the time gets closer. I'll also be returning to Mount Shasta from July 2nd to the 8th, 2019, and again from September 5th to the 11th, 2019. Mount Shasta is a very special and magical place where miracle healings occur, and we always see Sasquatch and many UFOs flying in and around Mount Shasta. The last time we were there in September, we were able to telepathically contact a benevolent UFO, and Adama, the High Priest of Telos, healed the vision in my right eyes, restoring them to perfect 2010 eyesight. The cost is only $200 per person, includes free camping. And if you'd like to go, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. We have some exciting people coming on our next hour, so please stay tuned for that. And with that, I'd like to welcome my good friend, Dr. Wolf Stoll, to my show. Wolf, thank you so much for coming on my show today.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me.
wonderful, Wolf. Well, you are a cultural anthropologist and ethnobotanist. You're famous throughout Europe for your fascinating anthropological, scientific, and spiritual research into plants and their botanical, historical, and spiritual elements. You have a PhD in anthropology, cum laude, from Bern, Switzerland. You've taught in India, the United States. Magna cum laude. Okay, yeah. Sorry. Okay, all right. Sorry about that. Okay. Let me drink some more coffee to keep awake here. You've written some 25, you said 30 books now?
30 books.
30 yeah. books, my goodness. He just handed one of the books here, another, 300-page book on the untold story of healing, a history of healing, plant lore and medicinal magic from the Stone Age to the present. My goodness.
Yeah,
all that history in one little book. That's amazing, Rolf. That's amazing. You've appeared on as a frequent guest on German, Swiss, and Austrian television. You've also appeared on the BBC. Your website is english.store, STORL.DE/Dr. Wolf Dieter Stoll Biography. Well, tell me, Wolf, how did you ever get interested in plants and how they can benefit people?
Well, that goes way back. That goes back to my early childhood. And I think it goes probably back to previous lives. And it's been part of my life all along.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Now, you've written so many things about in your book, Untold History of Healing. Tell us about, do plants live off spiritual nourishment? Like, if you send good thoughts to plants, and how does that work?
Well, the world is one. Life has one origin. We are related to plants. Way back in early history of life, it was the plants that made it possible for other beings to live on this earth. And actually, it seems as though the plants invented animals, and including us, in order to get rid of all the oxygen they were creating, because oxygen is for plants like waste material, and they were about to suffocate in the oxygen. So they created, you can say that, or made a way for beings that breathe oxygen, that use oxygen and oxidate, burn plant material as food. It's a cycle. It's a cycle. Without animals that provide the plants the carbon dioxide they need to grow, life wouldn't really be possible. So we are related with the plants. For example, our blood is red. The formula for hemoglobin, that's the ham, the blood, is exactly the same. It's a porphyr ring of, it's a molecular ring, just like the chlorophyll in the plants. The only thing, the only difference is we have iron, one iron atom in the middle of this complex atom, and the plants in their green juice have one magnesium atom. In other words, we are complementary to each other. Our blood fluoresces green, and the green sap of the plants has a red fluorescent. So, in other words, we are really related, and we can communicate with the plants not only through our breathing, and plants communicate with us through the odors and smells, the perfumes, that they work directly on our soul, on our emotions. You know, there's such a thing as aromatherapy, but it goes deeper than that. The more we connect with the plants, the more we are fascinated by the plants, look at them, the more we evoke their reactions, we evoke their souls, so to say. We have our soul inside of us. Plants have their soul around them, and in order to communicate with the plants, we have to go on to their level. That's why in India, for example, yogis who are good in meditation are able to contact the soul of the plant. It's other than botanists who botany is great, but that only concerns the surface of the plant. That means it is analyzed, weighed, measured, and so on. It's you stay on the outside, but in shamanistic tradition, in Indian yoga tradition, you kind of get on to that spiritual level the plants are on. Now, when you do that, even when you look with loving eyes on the plant, I mean, not when you just fantasize about them, but when you really look at them, just like when you look at a woman who's so beautiful and for a man, or vice versa.
Or a plant.
Or a plant, yeah. You look at a plant.
A flower, for example.
A flower is the easiest, because that's where the plant soul is most manifest. But if you look at a plant or a tree and you look at it with love and appreciation, that is, like, for the plant, something wonderful. It is what my teacher, an old peasant in the mountains, called spiritual fertilizer. And then the plants grow better. And for some people, you know, I studied at the Ohio State University agriculture, because I wanted to know more about plants, and I looked at the fields there, and all these plants looked so unhappy, and they didn't grow well because nobody really loved them. They were objects.
Right.
They were not something you would kind of cuddle with your soul. But they were objects, and they were, you know, run through all kinds of tests and run through test tubes and so on. So they were not being loved. And, you know, George Washington Carver, he was one of the great scientists. He was born as a black slave, born in slavery. And as a little kid, he loved plants. And people brought in sick house plants, and he healed them again. And he said, plants will tell you anything, everything you want to know, providing you love them enough.
No. You know, Wolf, it's been too long since I had you on my show. And the last time I had you on, I was totally in awe of what you had to say. And right now I'm in awe, because you've said more in the past, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes, then sometimes I'll read an entire book, and that not that much information is imparted, but it's amazing. One thing I have to ask you about is something like Finhorn, for example, where, from what I understand, people in Scotland send lots of love and good thoughts to their plants, and the plants go crazy. They get really big. Could you explain a little bit about that? I'd love your opinion on that.
Yeah, I think her name was Eileen Caddy, who... who was clairvoyant, and she was able to see the into the soul of the plant. Oh, and she talked about plant devas. And plant devas are not the soul of a little bee, a little plant, but they are the soul of the entire species. Let's say the daisy, you know.
Wow.
The daisy is connected with every daisy on the in the universe, on the earth. And it is when your little kids pick themselves daisies and make a wreath or enjoy it, or when a cow eats a daisy and feels good about it, the daisy spirit, the daisy deva, knows this, you know, experiences this, and therefore the daisy. And when people ignore it, that's the worst thing for plants. When plants are being ignored, then even if you hate plants, even that it kind of puts them into being. You know, it's like if they're ignored, they kind of drift out of being, so to say. And every plant species has a deva. Of course, there are little spirits connected, say, with individual plants, but those are little nature spirits. And if you know, some esoterically motivated person asks them and is capable of seeing them and asks them, are you the plant deva? And the little thing will say, yes, of course, I'm the plant deva. But that's just, that's just joking around, you know. And those that are truly connected to plants, I mean, the real plant lovers, botanists, they work with the devas. And this is what happened in Findhorn. They worked with the devas, they communicated, they asked the devas, and therefore, this is near the Arctic Circle where they lived, they got wonderful, wonderful plants, as huge cabbages, I think they were, I don't know, as bigger than, these big health balls or whatever they call it.
Right? Sure.
They really grew wonderful.
Right.
And scientists did not know why that was, and they looked for all kinds of reasons. The reasons are not, you cannot get at this with a scientific method, because that is reductionist.
Wow, that's incredible. I have to ask you this. Of course, in the West, we're so used to pharmaceutical products and products produced by Big Pharma. What can people do to free themselves of the chemicals, which are given as nearly exclusively as medicine today? How do we reclaim that ancient knowledge?
Well, we go back to the plants, and there are still enough people who know about how plants heal. I mean, even in the States and in the native people, they know that. And you ask them that, and plants have been our co-evolutionary companions for 400 million years. We weren't humans back then.
Right.
We were like amphibians, but we had a sense, which animals still have to this day, have a sense what plants do us good and which do not do us good. You know, cows, I see here, up here on this mountain pasture, you know, they when they're not feeling well, they pick, they eat certain plants and leave others. And so it's innate in animals. We have lost a lot of our instincts, but we do have a cultural tradition, and we have a long, long experience with the plants. And it is not that we learned about it through trial and error. That's an error in itself, to think that they were, we like scientists, you know, trying to find the right plant, and then some died, and you'd say, oh my God, no, we can't eat that. And no, they had contact with the spirit of the plant, with the deva, and the deva told them. And I found this is still, in fact, I knew a great medicine man, a great medicine man of the Cheyenne. That was Bill Talbot. Mm-hmm. And I spent a year and a half walking around the Bighorn Mountains and in the, you know, in the prairie and stuff. And I noticed he did not talk about plants. He talked with plants. Mm-hmm. And that was his gift. He was the ambassador of his people to the green people. And I learned a lot from that. And he said, no, it wasn't trial and error, but it was getting into deep resonance, into deep communication. And then you knew the plant told what it could do. And that was a gift from the plant spirit to the human being.
Interesting.
Our medicine, our real medicine, and the medicine in ancient times, was a gift of the spirits, specifically of the plant Deva.
Wow, that's incredible. It was a couple of years ago, another psychic told me that, maybe it was you, Wolf, on my last show with you some time ago, but I learned that every plant has a specific purpose, and there's always a plant out there somewhere that can help with every disease or problem people have.
Yeah, that's right. That is almost universal. Every, you know, I am an anthropologist, and just about every culture has that belief. For every sickness, there is a plant. And even the old Europeans, in Sicily, there was a school of doctors, and they wrote, why does a man in Salerno, these are the verses of the Salerno doctors, why does a human being die when a healing plant grows in the garden? You want it in Latin? Cur moritator homo, qui salvia in horto crescit. And salvia, many translators thought that meant sage, but it's not sage. That means a healing plant. Wow. For every sickness, there's a healing plant.
Wow.
And then, except for death, for the poison of death, because everything that comes into being goes again out of being, and we cannot, and no plant will give us something that we are, that we hang around here forever. Maybe it'd be kind of terrible if we hang around, say, 200 years, man, crossed teeth, and well, yeah, false joints and transplanted organs and Viagra and you name it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's not worth living, you know.
Yeah,
I'd rather go back to the origin. I'd rather go back to the source and then be sent back again.
In your book, which is an excellent book, The Untold History of Healing, and I urge everyone to get a copy, Wolf's last name is Storl. You put modern medicine into historical perspective, pointing out how it developed. Could you explain how we got into the mess we are in today with Big Pharma owning and controlling much of these so-called remedies?
Yeah. Well, we hear that medicine started somewhere in Egypt and the Near East, and then went to Greece, and Hippocrates, father of medicine, got rid of the superstitions, and then it went to Rome, and then it, the barbarians, you know, the wild tribes came, they were illiterate, and they just about wiped out this great knowledge, but some Christian monks in their cells wrote down this knowledge, and thus it was saved, and then it developed slowly into modern medicine. That is an ethnocentric point of view, and because every tribe, medicine did not start there. Every tribe, every people has their medicine. It's local medicine, and it is sufficient to the problems in that region. Like dank fever, those people would not have dank fever here, a remedy here in Europe. But in India, very early, they found like a remedy. Mm. And this remedy is not an antibiotic, for example. So next to this official literary medicine of the high doctors and the monks was the common medicine of the common people, and it was for mainly it was a medicine of the grandmothers of the women, because they took care of the sick and of the children and accompanied those who were leaving this earth, and they were responsible. They were responsible also for the animals on the farmstead, and in these here in Germany they call them Hausfrau, and Frau is just another word for Freya. It's the goddess in the house that does the healing. But that's universal. I mean, it is also American Indians. The women were usually responsible for giving birth, for promoting life, for agricultural tribes like the Iroquois. It was the women who owned, not personally, but as a group, did the work. And the men did the hunting, and they did the killing of the trees when new land was being, made Sweden agriculture, you know. So, but everywhere there was a folk tradition. It was not dependent upon being able to read and write. It was something that was learned from generation to generation. It was given from the grandmother to the daughter and to the granddaughter and so on. Mm. And this is a very, very good medicine, but it is non-monetary either. And so kind of in the Middle Ages, apothecaries and doctors started selling the medicine, and often it was not really healing. It was like bloodletting, and calomel is a mixture of mercury poison, you know. And that was the big super medicine, like penicillin in the last century. Wow. And the people and the people reacted to these poisons like calomel and started saliva flowed sometimes a liter per person or more, and that was considered to be that the bad humors, science of the day back then, bad humors were being let out of the body, and it was so effective that hair fell out and teeth fell out and so on. That was the official medicine, whereas the women in the villages cured actually better, but they were of low status, they were considered ignorant, yeah. they were not studied, and this medicine of the old women mainly, there were also some young ones who were especially gifted. That is interesting to me, and I think we should look more closely at them. And here in the Alps, there are in some nooks and crannies, there are still some of these healing women, yeah.
Wow, that's fascinating. It reminds me a little bit like people use chemotherapy today to treat cancer when it only has a 3% success rate. It's much like bloodletting used to be in England.
Yeah, it has the same origin. It has the same origin because... it started actually chemotherapy and the like started when the syphilis came to Europe from North America or from the Caribbean. It came with Columbus, even the first return journey, and they noticed
sailors.
Yeah, the sailors. One of the sailors had this sickness, and it became virulent. It is like just like the Europeans brought a lot of sicknesses to America, you know, there's simple things like flus, measles, and the like, and many of the native people died. Nice. And in return, they got the syphilis, and they tried all the herbs that they had here. They tried the herbs of Venus in order to calm down Venus. It's a Venerian disease, venereal disease. Yeah. Or the herbs of Mars, sharp, aggressive plants, and none of them helped. So they looked for other means, and they found in the Arabian alchemy, they found these poison minerals. And then it seemed like, in contrast to herbal teas and like, seemed like, wow, man, I'd really head in there and actually the people got sicker. But at that point, when Bill started to think that the herbal lore of the women was just superstition and didn't work anymore, and so that is how chemotherapy, the model for that, is still effective today.
My goodness, incredible. It's always fascinating to talk to you, Wolf. I always learn some really new and interesting things. Well, let's have some fun. In your book, you talk about ladybugs and beetles for healing. Talk about ladybugs. I always thought if a ladybug lands on my shirt, for example, or on me, I figure that's a good sign. Tell us about ladybugs and beetles.
Yeah, of course, it's a good sign. It always has been, even in pre-Christian times. Mm-hmm. The ladybug was associated with the heavens, with in pre-Christian time, with the goddess. The great goddess Freya, and then it was associated with Mary. Mm. That's why an old English name for ladybug is Mary's chafer. Chafer means a bug. It's an old English bug. And ladybug, the lady is the goddess, or is Mary. Mm. And what was done in tribal times all over Europe was to, because you can let the ladybug climb up your finger, and then on top it flies away. And therefore, children rhyme these days is ladybug, ladybug, fly away home, your house is on fire, your children are gone.
Oh no.
And and here in Germany it is ladybug, ladybug, your house is on fire, there's a war, go back to England, but it's not England. Engel is a word for the angels. Oh. Go to the angels. And what one did, or French, vol au ciel, ton père te demande, fly to heaven, your father is calling you. And what one did is place the sickness, or the spirit of the sickness, onto the little bug. And then you said that word, and he'd fly and take the illness away. We would today say, well, that's a placebo or that's a suggestion, but it was part of their view of the world, and they did see in ancient times, they did see the spirit of sickness. We just see the symptoms, and we can measure the fever curve and do all kinds of tests, but every sickness has a spirit, and the spirit, it can be seen with the soul, with the mirror of the soul. That's how they call it here. And if you look into that mirror of the soul, then the spirit reveals itself and gives itself a form. And if you can take this form, if you on that level, and you say, okay, here, I'll put you on that little beetle now. Fly off into heaven. And that actually did heal.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. Those things
nobody teaches people about that.
That's right. Well, here's another fun question. What's magical about elderberries, about the elder plant?
You want me to talk 5 or 10 hours or what?
We've got about 20 minutes or so, but as best as you can. Sorry, the limitation.
Well, the elderberry, the elder was always, the elder existed already in the old Stone Age, in the mammoth steppes. And it grew, it loves light, and it loves a lot of good nitrogen fertilizer. So it grew where the mammoth or the bisons or the reindeer, where they spend time at night. And so that's where it grew. When later on it got warmer and the forests came, the elderberry was kind of like, had a difficult time. It was like an orphaned, you know. And then when the first farmers came, they cleared the forest, and then they had their farmstead, and near the farmstead, where the cows and the chickens and the goats and the pigs left their fecal matter and so on, That was ideal for the elderberry, and it grew there. And so it became associated with the farmstead. Every farmstead had an elder. And in meditation, when you sit under an elder, you have the feeling. She receives of the animals that that have been hunted or that died. She receives the seeds in the winter, and then in the spring, she lets the seeds come up again. She sends the souls back up. So the elder is a portal or is a door to the world of this archaic Paleolithic goddess. And it is where the elves and gnomes connected with the earth go in and out, and that's next to the farmstead. And so when you you can make offerings at that point to the ancestors at the elderberry, and you can take spirits of sickness and hang them on the elderberry, because it draws down into the earth, and then it neutralizes the spirits. They fall, that was the imagination, into the kettle of this old goddess and get cooked and recycled. Sicknesses, you just hang them onto the elderberry. Very rationally, these days, elderberry blossom tea is a very strong immune system strengthening medicine, and this is empirically, scientifically correct, and also the berries are good, and it has an antiviral effect for all kinds of viruses, where partially the school medicine doesn't have any means to deal with them, and the leaves. They made a salve from the leaves, mostly with the fat of badgers or pigs or bear back then. And that is for skin burns and frostbite. And and there was then the thing of, it was a purgative. So if you scrape the elderberry bast, I mean, the underneath the outside rind, if you scrape it and take about as much as the size of a walnut for an adult, and cook that and drink that, you have to puke. That's a good word, isn't it?
Yes.
I have fancier words.
It's legal for you to say that on the
okay,
air.
Okay, I'm glad.
Yeah.
or you really get a real bad diarrhea. So what they said is it drives the evil spirit, the sickness, directly out, either through the top or through the bottom. And the Celtic name, old Celtic, the Gauls, Celts, the name of the elder was scobium. And scobium means that which you, where you scrape the, it's how you mean scrape. It's a very scrape the spark. Mm-hmm. And it was a sacred plant. The spirits of the dead sit on the elder branches when you want to visit their families. So never ever did you cut an elder, even if it threatened to grow in front of your door, so you couldn't get in or out. The Nordic people, the English had a ritual for that, in case you had to cut it. Mm. So that was at full moon, you would give an offering, usually white, something white, milk or flour, because that's food for the ghosts. And then you'd talk to the elder and say, old lady or old girl, give me of thy wood, and I will give thee my bones when I'm dead. Yeah, and that is, and then you could cut it 14 days later in the new moon phase.
Yeah.
I mean, it's full of lore. You know, one could write a big, thick book about it. And I don't know if I want to do that.
Well, someone could write a book called The Untold Story of Healing, History of Healing. Isn't that the name of your book? They could write
That's the name, they could write that. There's a little bit about the elder in this book,
Well, Wolf, I have to ask you this question. I hope you don't mind. I've got a little bit of a cold tonight.
Yeah.
Could I have some elderberry tea, if you wouldn't mind? Is it hard to find elderberries this time of night in Germany at midnight?
Yeah, in our kitchen you can find it. And I see my old lady, I mean my wife, she just made a pot of tea for you.
Oh.
It'll do you good.
Oh, how nice.
It'll
that's
rev
wonderful.
Up your immune system.
Yeah, okay.
And,
oh, that's...
and all those viruses will just say,
Well, you do have a lovely cat and a dog here. And I guess I could ask them. Oh, she just brought it. Thank you so much, Christine. That's great. Well, let me ask you this, too. This is an interesting, another interesting question. We're kind of running on. We have still some good time. I'd like to ask you about the sedentary lifestyle that when people became agriculturalists and they no longer became nomadic hunters.
Right, right.
Did that lead to new diseases?
Yeah. All people have some illnesses, but you have to see that the hunters and gatherers, they lived in time of the, right after the Stone Age or in the Stone Age. They had fresh air and they were on the move so that, refuse and stuff didn't accumulate and, they were generally healthy. The problems they had were maybe rheumatism from laying where it's too cold and, but infectious diseases were not found with, this is what medical anthropologists
I see, yeah.
Have found out they were not subject to infectious diseases.
So by extension, then, if we can exercise more, that's preventative health in
yeah,
itself.
Yeah, right, it okay. is. But then when people became sedentary, then, their refuse and garbage collected it. Drew flies. There were no flies either in the New World or in Northern Europe or in Northern Asia until they came with the first farmers from the Mideast. The fly is actually an Egyptian insect.
Mm-hmm.
And flies can be vectors of disease.
Yeah.
And then if you're sedentary, well, you've got your bed always in the same place. Well, that can lice and bed bugs and mites and all kinds of stuff. The water could become a problem. People had parasites. Mm-hmm. And so it is a fact that the health of the first sedentary people was a lot worse than those of the Stone Age people. I mean, the hunters and gatherers, they were smaller in statues. In stature, the farmers, they had problems with joints and bones. They had partially iron deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
That's because I know vegetarians won't like this, but that's because they hardly ever ate liver.
Mm-hmm.
And they ate too much carbohydrates so that their teeth were worse. And so actually with sedentary life came a lot of the problems that plagued humanity. You know, the biblical plagues are sicknesses that have to do with sedentary life.
Well, let me ask you a serious question. So if someone sits around all day and eats chocolate bonbons and grapes, is that's not good for their health? Just watches TV all day.
Yeah, that's a great way to live. You just sit on and watch TV all the time and eat chocolates and so on. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then take pills in case you know. and then if
that's
that doesn't work, you go to the hospital and get whatever doesn't function. You just have it cut out, you know.
That's great. I just love your advice. It's so profound.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's something I never thought about. So
No, I think what we need is a lot of bodily exercise, and get yourself a dog or so, and that dog will want to take walks or bicycle with you if you're in the city, or get a garden and dig, and don't use machinery. Anyway, if you use machinery, well, the machine kind of possesses you, but if you dig up a garden and work in the garden, that is meditation.
Let's say hypothetically, if you need to go to an appointment and it's 20 miles away, should you walk or bicycle that 20 miles?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Well, Wolf, you've touched on so many interesting things. You've got a huge book here on the history of healing. We've got about 9 or 10 minutes left.
Okay.
And I wanted to open the door up, and you're welcome to talk about anything you like. My friend, you're just a fascinating fellow, and I always enjoy talking to you.
Anything we like to talk about?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I have kind of like a blank mind, and so you better ask.
All right. Let's say someone has a serious disease out there, hypothetically, and I always like to help people on my show. What kinds of things would you encourage them to check out? Alternative medicine, alternative healing?
In any case,
okay,
first of all, we should come in contact with ourselves. There's nobody who knows our body better than we ourselves, and even the most sophisticated machine or scanning device it can compare. And it's very good to go into meditation and to let consciousness flow into those areas that are afflicted. Mm-hmm. Consciousness itself is a power, and it is not that bingo, suddenly you might be healed, but it is a force that brings you back into harmony, because our true nature is actually health. Mm-hmm. It is sometimes we lose balance and we do get sick. I mean, that's part of being in a universe that is constantly changing. We constantly adapt to it. I've noticed that the illnesses that I've had, and some serious ones, they are like the best gurus we have, because they force you to confront your fears, your emotions, get involved in this wonderful body that was given to us during this incarnation. And when you have gone through an illness and come out of it, you are more knowledgeable, you're wiser, you are more experienced, and you're more thankful. You're thankful, first of all, that suffering has been, that you've gone through it and you've managed it. It strengthens your character. It is a sick idea to think that we should always be super healthy. We stay super stupid, really.
I have to ask you another serious question. Well, actually, it was many years ago. I visited the pyramids in Egypt.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things my tour guide said, and it's something I've always stuck in my mind, he said that in Egyptian culture, 5,000 years ago, every disease had a dis-ease. In other words, a spiritual cause.
Yeah.
And if you can figure out the spiritual cause for your disease, then you can cure yourself faster.
Yeah.
And in a good way, easier way than you can with traditional Western medicine. Love your opinion on that.
Well, the thing is that is what true shamanic healing is about. Shamanism is a form of healing. It is basically a form of contacting the world of the spirits. And it is the shamans. I was just last year in Mongolia and southern Siberia, and I met a lot of shamans there. And what they do is they travel into this space in between, into this metaphysical space, and figure out or confront the spirit. They drum them out. They drum them out of the body with drums and sing them out and smoke them out with all kinds of mainly with artemisia and juniper and sometimes a certain kind of grass or thyme, you know, thymian, and they work to get the spirit out, and the body might still be suffering, and then they use herbs to heal the body out. So first of all is this spiritual struggle. And then, you know, it still hurts, and the tissue is still damaged. And then you use the herbs specifically, and you heal them out. This is, there's something called the lay of herbs, Anglo-Saxon lay of herbs. Uh-huh. That was here too, and there's 9 herbs are mentioned. They talk about the shaman god Woden. He's actually related, but he's not identical with Odin. And he took, it is in his shaman song, a serpent came crawling to bite a human being. Serpents often the image that we have of a demon that causes illness. And Woden took 9 herbs and smote the serpent, and the serpent fell apart, and then comes the shamanic song, how he does that, and then the herbs are mentioned, and these are herbs that had been used way back then. They're still functional, and it's interesting that the plants that North American Indians use, 75% of those plants were plants that they had known already in Siberia. They had brought that knowledge with them, just as they had brought the round shaman drum with them and the teepee. There's still tribes like the Tungus or the Vanks in Siberia that still lived in teepees until the Soviets forced them to live in kind of Western houses. Mm-hmm. Huh. But Proto-Indians or the Paleo-Indians, Paleo-Siberians, took all that knowledge with them, and they took the knowledge of their healing plants with them and the rituals surrounding them. For example, the use of elder, to come back to the elder, the Indians scrape the elder, they use it to sweat, just detoxifying, and they scrape the young elder shoots upwards, and that causes regurgitation, and downwards, and that drives a sickness demon through the intestines. And you think, oh, that's superstition, but that practice still exists in Siberia, in Russia, and I heard and I read here out of Roman times Gaulic, those are Celts, folk medicine, and they did that too.
Wow.
You know, and does it work?
Mm-hmm.
It works. They say it works.
Yeah.
But the why does it work is because when the healer says it's been scraped upwards, and then the person, the body says, okay, I notice, boom, it goes out. It is the power of suggestion.
Right.
It is the therapeutic word.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've had so much fun today, Wolf. I'm so sorry. We've got about a minute left, but I wanted to add that for many Native Americans in North America, in Central and South America, they would use sage, and they burn sage to get rid of negative spirits or evil spirits in a particular house or negative energy. And then they put salt in the corners of each room because beneficial spirits love that, love the sage. We've got about 30 or so seconds left, and I wanted you to, if you could, wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's what we call sage is actually artemisia.
Mm-hmm.
And it is mugwort. It's kinds of mugworts. And there's in the literature a lot of confusion. because mugworts are bitter and they're gray, and the first settlers came in there and he said, hey, that's sage, but it is not sage. It is Artemisia, it's mugwort. That is the sacred plant.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your wonderful knowledge today. Wolf, I've learned so much from you, Please stay tuned, my friends, to the next hour. We'll be going to Italy for Professor Giuseppe Vitellio on Water is Life and Michiko Hayashi from Tokyo. Please stay tuned.